Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 5, entitled Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness, Text Number 12. Yuktaha karma phalam tyaktva shantim apnoti naishtike ayuktaha kama karena phale sakto nibhadhyate. Translation: the steadily devoted soul attains unadulterated peace because he offers the results of all activities to me. Whereas a person who is not in union with the divine, who is greedy for the fruits of his labor, becomes entangled. Purport: the difference between a person in Krishna consciousness and a person in bodily consciousness is that the former is attached to Krishna, whereas the latter is attached to the results of his activities. The person who is attached to Krishna and works for him only is certainly a liberated person, and he has no anxiety over the results of his work. In the Bhagavatam, the cause of anxiety over the result of an activity is explained as being one's functioning in the conception of duality, that is, without knowledge of the absolute truth. Krishna is the supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead. In Krishna consciousness, there is no duality. All that exists is a product of Krishna's energy, and Krishna is all good. Therefore, activities in Krishna consciousness are on the absolute plane. They are transcendental and have no material effects. One is therefore filled with peace in Krishna consciousness. But one who is entangled in profit calculation for sense gratification cannot have that peace. This is the secret of Krishna consciousness: realization that there is no existence besides Krishna in the platform of peace and fearlessness. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjanashalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So in today's world, which is plagued with so much of anxiety and mental problems, so much of stress in society, this particular verse of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita gives the answer to all such problems. How to gain peace in this world? So Bhagavad Gita is like a manual which helps us to be happy in this life and to achieve perfection after death. It's like a law book. And along with the law book in this world, we see, along with law books come law journals. And similarly, Bhagavad Gita gives us many formulas of how to be happy, how to be peaceful, how to achieve perfection in this life and in the next. And the Srimad Bhagavatam, it provides with case studies of stories which actually tell us how exactly this principle was followed by great personalities and how they also achieved perfection. The Srimad Bhagavatam is a Purana. It is called the Amala Purana, the most important of all Puranas. Now, Puranas contain numerous historical stories of kings and queens and other people of bygone ages who acted in such a way which proves a particular point from the Shrutis, like the Bhagavad Gita. So, to make the point, to establish the point, or to elaborate on the point which Krishna makes in this particular verse, I will be speaking of a historical evidence from the Puranas. Before I proceed further, one small thing about the Puranas, that Puranas are not simply stories. They are actually historical narrations, actual historical facts. Now many times, people find it a little difficult to understand this point, that actually Puranas are histories. What are the reasons? One reason could be because of ambiguity. Some things which are given in the Puranas doesn't seem to be very certain. Many times the history of a particular king is being spoken, and before him, after him, what happened, nothing is given. Some ambiguity is there. But if you observe modern history also, which we accept wholeheartedly, even modern history is filled with ambiguity. For example, when it comes to history of ancient India, what is accepted is the Aryan invasion theory, which says that Aryans came from some foreign land and into India. But again, if you ask them, from where did they come from? What is their origin before they came to India? That is unknown. It's ambiguous. So if Puranas are ambiguous in certain areas, modern history is filled with ambiguity. You say the Aryans invaded India, but they might have been somewhere to come to India. They didn't emerge from thin air. That is not possible. Where did they come from? They have no answer. And because of this ambiguity, it is said, it is one of the reasons for the Second World War. Because Adolf Hitler, he claimed that we Germans are the original Aryans. You don't know, historians, you don't know where the Aryans came from? I will tell you. They came from Germany. We are the original Aryans. And only we are supposed to rule the planet, therefore. So a byproduct of this Aryan invasion theory is the Second World War also. So this ambiguity has created, has costed the deaths of millions of people. So this is one thing, ambiguity. And we see, modern history is not exempt from this principle. Another thing is, people wonder about some things which are given in the Puranas. Unbelievable phenomena are there in the Puranas. It's a fact. Some things which are unbelievable. But is modern history exempt from unbelievable phenomena? It is not. For example, let's see the history of life on the planet, which is part of history only. How did the giraffe come from? It says that the deer was grazing in the fields, on the lawns and the fields, and the grass and the plants got exhausted. And then the deer, it saw that there were leaves available on the treetops. So because leaves were available on the treetops, it stretched its neck. And over a prolonged period of time, when it went on stretching its neck, what happened? It became the giraffe. This is accepted as a fact in science. Unbelievable. Even if you tell a child, he won't believe it. He will tell you, show me. So if the child asks you, show me God, Well, he can also ask, how did the giraffe come from? Show me how the giraffe came from the deer also. And then, from where did the blue whale come from? Then there was a bear. The bear, it's a mammal. Now, all the other fishes are, what do you call it? Aquatics. Amphibians. Not amphibians. Aquatics. But the bear is a mammal. So, blue whale, it doesn't belong to one of the categories of fishes. It is a mammal. So, you need an explanation from where the mammal, a whale, get into the ocean. So, the story goes that the bear, which is a mammal, was looking for food on land. And after some time, the food got exhausted on land. So, slowly it started going inside the water to catch fishes in the water, because there was no food on the land. So, when it went slowly, over a period of time, it became the blue whale. Now, what a fantastic story it is. Is it believable? Absolutely unbelievable. But still, it is accepted as history. And of course, modern historians do many things to hide unbelievable aspects of history, so that it is presentable also. That is also done, so that it is made believable. Because there are certain things, even in modern history, which are unbelievable. For example, in Hyderabad, there is one museum, some junk museum. So, in that museum, Salar Jung Museum. So, in that museum, many artifacts and things used by warriors of the Mughal era, they are being preserved. So, the armor which was used by Akbar, it is also present there, still kept today. So, when there was shooting going on for Mughal-e-Azam movie, Prithviraj Kapoor was acting as, I think, Akbar. The director felt that to make the movie realistic, Prithviraj Kapoor should wear the original armor which was worn by Akbar himself. But what happened? When that armor was put on Prithviraj Kapoor, he couldn't get up. Forget about moving around and fighting with that armor, because the armor was so heavy. Three people had to lift him up. And the sword which was used in the Mughal era, it is still there. And a weightlifter has to lift it with great difficulty. Now, isn't it unbelievable to think that Akbar used to wear that armor, and with that sword, with his wrist alone, he used to not only carry that sword, but fight with that sword. If he had felt it very heavy, then before he would lift it up, the enemy would have killed him. So the very fact that he lifted it and fought with it means he was very powerful. And the Bhagavatam says actually that as Kali Yuga progresses, the strength of people goes on reducing. So, when you look from the point of the realities given in the scriptures, even unbelievable things in history become believable. It's understandable. Now, who knows, as time progresses, 100 years from now, historians might conveniently hide those armors and swords, because they won't have an explanation of really people used to wear these armors and fight with these swords. So, historians, they're very expert in this. And then, one more thing that might trouble people while accepting the Puranas is, Puranas speaks of fantastic powers possessed by people. That mantra weaponry. By using mantras, they could control warfare. What does mantra mean? Mantra is subtle energy connected to the mind. Man means the mind. That which uses psychic energy, psychic powers, subtle powers, that is mantra. And we might feel, how is it possible? Looks unbelievable. But actually, if you see history, after the Soviet Union dismantled, many of the KGB, which was like the defense force of the former Soviet Union, they came to America and they revealed many of the secrets, the secret defense policies of the Soviet Union, which was happening. And they revealed that many Soviet scientists were being employed by the Soviet military to do thorough research into psychic powers. And these scientists were told, don't be sentimental. While doing research, even if you have to kill people or hurt people, don't worry. Just proceed with it. Research into psychic powers and research into electromagnetic waves. So that without visibility and from thousands of kilometers away sometimes, the enemy could be attacked. Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai. And the Soviet scientists, after conducting their research, their conclusion was, human brains are devices for receiving and transmitting. And then, they could develop devices called psychic generator. And what is a psychic generator? A psychic generator can influence an individual or a whole crowd of people. It can affect a person's psyche, mentally and emotionally. It can affect memory and attention span. A psychotronic device can cause physical fatigue, disorientation and alter a person's behavior. So actually they developed such devices. And the most horrifying of all devices which they were successful in developing were stick waves. This was developed way back in 1974. What is a stick wave? Special radiation from living cells broadcast information from one group of cells to another, even over a distance. So they discovered that living cells, they can transmit radiation to other living cells, which might be kilometers away. And these were called stick waves. Why? Because a diseased cell could, using these devices, transmit waves to healthy cells of bodies living kilometers away. What does that mean? A person is very sick, and using these devices, his sickness can be transmitted to a healthy person who might be living kilometers away. An extensive $500 million used to be spent on such research work. And the scientists had got concrete evidence that these instruments do work, and they had developed many of such devices. So when you see this, we understand that these scientists are simply scratching the surface of what the ancient Vedic warriors had achieved. In the Vedic times, the warriors had such mantras. Mantra means again psychic power, by which they could induce a weapon by which the army, the opposite army, used to start yawning and used to go to sleep. When we read the Puranas, sometimes we might feel that these are stories. But then, these historical evidences which come from behind the curtains, they give us an understanding that these things are not impossible. These things are not actually unbelievable. So Puranas are actually ancient historical histories which give us an in-depth understanding of what is spirituality. And those historical incidents are selected which convey very powerful messages. And there is one particular historical evidence, one particular historical story, which actually elaborates on this particular verse which we are reading today. I read the translation once again. The steadily devoted soul attains unadulterated peace because he offers the results of all activities to me. Whereas a person who is not in union with the divine, who is greedy for the fruits of his labor, becomes entangled. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a story of the chief of the devatas, Indra. So once upon a time, Indra, he was sitting in his assembly and he was surrounded by many other demigods, Siddhas, Charanas, Urugas, and he was seeing a performance by the Gandharvas and the Apsaras. And while he was seeing this, what happened? His spiritual master Brihaspati entered. And because Indra was surrounded by so many people and he was being glorified by all that singing and he was a center of attraction, so he felt that why should I offer respect to Brihaspati? And so he didn't get up to show respect to Brihaspati. And so Brihaspati became angry and he left the assembly, and immediately Indra lost all his powers. And when the demons attacked, understanding that Indra has lost his powers, Indra was defeated and the demons captured the heavenly kingdom. From this Puranic incident, we can understand a very nice lesson. Prabhupada says that when a person increases in material opulence, he becomes very proud and he feels it is not very important to follow many rules and regulations. He cites the example of America. Now America, it has increased in its opulence unlimitedly. Of course, quite limitedly, but still, compared to developing countries. And so, initially, America, their slogan was, "In God we trust." And now if you see, it's a lawless land in many ways. The crime rate is constantly increasing. People are absolutely lawless. Because the tendency is, when you have got a lot of power and opulence, the need to follow rules and regulations doesn't seem to be very important. So Prabhupada says that America, in addition to increasing material opulence, should also create ideal human beings. That is required. And we see this happening in India also. That as India is developing technologically day by day, and as we are developing, so-called developing from a material point of view, we see people are becoming more and more godless. People more and more feel that there is no need of following rules of the Shastras, initially they feel. And slowly, when they are used to not following the rules of the Shastras, in due course of time, they stop following the rules of the state also. And when you don't follow the rules of the state, what happens? Crime rate increases. So you get both sides of the coin. Along with blind material development comes lawlessness. It's inevitable. History says it. American history says it. And it is following in India too. Because as soon as a person gains more power, influence, money, he doesn't feel it's very important to respect others, follow what others say, follow what the elders say, follow what the shastras say. He feels I can do whatever I want. It's like when I was studying in my college, in IIT. So first day, all of us students were sitting in the class, and a very old professor, he entered the classroom. Now as it is, the system, as it is being taught from the childhood, in schools, I don't know what is the system today, but generally in school when the teacher comes, the students get up, good morning teacher, they say, initially. But when they come to higher standard, they don't say good morning teacher, they simply stand and sit down. But at least they stand. So all of us stood up, the old professor came, so out of respect all of us stood up. And the professor said, sit down, not IIT style. Here nobody gets up. That is what he meant to say. Here no student gets up when the teacher enters the class. That means you are very great people. You need not show respect to others. So then what happened? After a few days, he had kept some papers, some answer papers on the table. And for a minute he had become absent from the room. And in his absence, the students, they casually went, took the papers from the table and they started doing whatever they wanted to do without his permission also. And after some time he comes back and starts yelling, you people, you are lawless. You people don't know how to behave. But he forgot that he himself had taught us what is misbehavior. Because unless people are taught these sacred principles of how important these things are, it is natural that they will become lawless and they start disrespecting elders in due course of time. So this was Indra's problem. What he did? He didn't get up when Brihaspati entered. He lost his kingdom to the demons. Because of his opulence, he was infatuated by false pride. And he lost all his power. And now, terrible anxiety, as his verse says today. When a person is greedy for the fruits of his activities, he is always in anxiety. That is Indra's life, if you see. Now our world, what is our world composed of? There is an ocean, and in the ocean there are seven continents. Indra's world is ocean of anxiety, and then there are continents of greed, lust, anger, illusion. These are islands in between. His life is filled with anxiety. In between he becomes proud sometimes when he gets power. And when he gets power, sometimes he becomes greedy. Sometimes he becomes lusty. Sometimes he becomes envious. And when he loses power, he gets back into the ocean of anxiety again. That is Indra's life. Now of course Indra is a great personality. And Krishna utilizes this particular person to teach us many lessons of how we should not be greedy for the fruits of our activities. And so Indra approaches Brahma. And he tells Brahma that what should I do now? Now that I have lost all my power. Brahma says, because you have disrespected Brihaspati, this is the consequence. This is the result of not following rules and regulations. What should I do now? Indra asked. Brihaspati said, go to a person called Vishwarup. So this Vishwarup is a great Brahman. He has done a lot of austerity. Become his disciple now. Accept him as guru. And then
What will happen is you'll gain so much power that you can regain your kingdom. So Indra goes to Vishwaroop. And Vishwaroop teaches him the Narayana Kavach. Powerful series of mantras. And by the power of reciting these mantras, Indra becomes very powerful again. And he regains his kingdom. So one day when Vishwaroop was performing yajna, he was offering oblations to the demigods. Indraya Swaha, Agnaya Swaha. But suddenly Indra detected that while Vishwaroop was offering oblations in the fire, without his knowledge, he was also offering oblations to the demons, in the name of the demons. Why? Because Vishwaroop, from his father's side, he was connected to the Devatas, and from his mother's side, he was connected to the Danavas. So both were his relatives. So he felt that I should also help the demons. Now Indra has his power already. But now he is influenced by envy. From anxiety, now that he has gained back his power, now he is influenced by envy. And he becomes angry because of envy. That why is Vishwaroop doing like this? Without thinking twice, he takes his sword and cuts off Vishwaroop's head. And then he realizes, I'm in trouble again. Again anxiety. Again back into the ocean. He has killed a Brahman. And he had to undergo a lot of sinful reactions. An additional thing happened. What was that? The Tvashta, the father of Vishwaroop, he performed yajna to take revenge from Indra. Because Indra had killed his son. So he performed a yajna to create a demon who would be so powerful that he would kill Indra. But somehow it so happened that he wrongly chanted a mantra and a demon was created who would be killed by Indra. There was little mistake that he did. And the demon that was created was Vritrasura. He was as huge as a mountain, a burnt mountain. Why? Because he was black in complexion. Then his hair, beard were coppery red. And then he used to yawn. And when he used to yawn, it looked like he would devour the whole sky. And when he used to walk, the whole earth used to tremble. And he was created to fight against the demigods. And when he came in front of the demigods took out all their astras and showered it upon Vritrasura. But for Vritrasura it was insignificant. He swallowed it all the weapons. And again, the demigods were thrown out of their kingdom. Now all the demigods, they approached Lord Vishnu. What is to be done now? And Lord Vishnu gave an idea that there is Dadichi Muni. He has performed a lot of austerities. You request him to give his bones. And using those bones, you make a thunderbolt, a weapon by which you can kill Vritrasura. So the demigods go to Dadichi. Now you see, Indra is in anxiety. And now, he is greedy. Greedy for what? Greedy for someone's life. He is asking Dadichi, you please die so that I can make a weapon and I can regain my kingdom once again. And so Dadichi was a great saint. So he said, okay, I will leave my body and these bones belong to you. And Indra takes those bones, prepares a thunderbolt. And then he attacks the demons. The demonic forces are headed by Vritrasura and the demigods are headed by Indra. And now, the demigods have gained a lot of power by pleasing Vishnu and gaining the bones of Dadichi. So now that the demons attacked the demigods completely dismantled all the weapons of the demons, completely. Then the demons take big, big boulders, trees, and throw it on the demigods. But the demigods also shatter that to pieces. And now, the demons become very afraid because they lost their power and they start running away from the battle. And the demigods feel that this is a good opportunity to kill the demons. So they start killing the demigods from behind. They start killing the demons from behind, and Vritrasu sees the whole scene. And he tells the demons, don't run away from the battlefield. This is not warfare. Don't be cowards. And then he rebukes the demigods. Why are you killing people from behind? But nobody is ready to listen to him. Now Indra, he confronts Vritrasur, and as soon as Vritrasur sees Indra, Vritrasur takes a mace and hits Indra's carrier Airavat. And Airavat falls back 14 yards and Indra also falls down. And Indra, now he seems to be lost completely. He has lost all his confidence. He is again immersed in anxiety. Will I win or will I lose? And now Vritrasur, he starts speaking to Indra. And the words that Vritrasur speaks shows that he is a devotee of the Lord. Even though he is a demon, he is actually a devotee. And he is urging Indra, Indra, you should kill me now, so that you will regain the kingdom and I will go back to the spiritual world. Why are you afraid? You have the blessings of Lord Vishnu. This weapon is infallible. It has to work. Just because you are being defeated temporarily, don't worry. You should attack me again. And so Indra, he takes his Vajra, attacks Vritrasur, chops off his left hand, his right hand. But again Vritrasur takes another weapon and hits Indra, and Indra's thunderbolt falls from his hand. And again he seems to be lost. Again he is in anxiety. Again he goes into depression. As his verse says, as long as a person is greedy for the fruits of his labor, he has to be perplexed by these things. Anxiety, tension, depression. Even Indra, a person from the heavenly planet, is not free from all these things because he is also greedy for the fruits of his labor. On the other hand, Vritrasur, because he is a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is equipoised. He has lost one of his hands. But still he tells Indra, don't worry, lift the thunderbolt. You are supposed to win, don't worry, you are supposed to win. Please lift the thunderbolt and hit me again. And then Indra takes courage. Again he lifts the thunderbolt, cuts off another of Vritrasur's arms. And Vritrasur has not given up yet. What does he do? He bows down and puts the lower jaw on the ground and extends his tongue and swallows Indra along with Airavat. And then he goes into meditation. And Indra, from within, because he has got the thunderbolt, he breaks open through Vritrasur's body, comes out, and Vritrasur is so deep in meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he doesn't know what is happening. Indra cuts the throat of Vritrasur, and it is told that it took him one full year, 365 days, to cut the neck of Vritrasur using his thunderbolt. He didn't have electronic thunderbolt maybe at that time. It took him one full year. And now again, he has killed a devotee of the Lord. Again he is inflicted by sinful reactions. He regained his kingdom, but again he is in anxiety. So this is Indra's life. And here Vritrasura, completely equipoised in all situations. Now, one thing to be understood is, many people in this world, sometimes they come to understand that actually because I am very greedy, I am always hankering for the fruits of my activities, I am always in anxiety and stress. Some of my relatives, when I visit their place, sometimes, maybe once in a few years, they come to me and relate their situation. Actually, I know. So much of anxiety, so much of stress, so much of tension. Why? Because I am greedy for the fruits. That is why. I know. So then, many of them even feel that, okay, I won't be greedy anymore. I'll be satisfied with whatever I have. But in due course of time, they find themselves in the same situation again. Of becoming greedy for more and more, running after the fruits, not being satisfied with what they have. Why does this happen? Srimad Bhagavatam gives an understanding. Kvachit nivartate abhadrat, kvachit charati tatpuna. That such kinds of people, sometimes they feel that leading such a life of greed is not conducive for me, mentally, physically, both. If you exert yourself, your mind breaks down, and in due course of time, the body also breaks down. And whatever wealth you have gained, it has to be put to regain your health. It goes to the psychiatrist, it goes to the doctors. What is the point? Sometimes they also understand. But in due course of time, they find themselves back in the same rat race. The Bhagavatam gives the example of a patient. A person is sick. He knows he is sick. Say a person with stomach problems. He knows he is sick. He should not eat too many things, especially fast food from outside. Sometimes it contains soda and other things which are not good for the health. So he knows he will become sick. But nonetheless, sometimes he goes outside and he ends up in a restaurant or a fast food hotel, eats it all, and then he feels, oh, I did a mistake. Now I won't eat anymore. Now that I have become sick, I'll go to the doctor. He goes to the doctor, takes the medicine. And after some time, what happens? Again, he ends up doing the same thing once again. Why? Because he has no control over his senses. He has no control over his tongue in this particular instance. So this is a process which people in general follow, the Srimad Bhagavatam says. But then there are a few people, they are like jnanis. And in the world today you will find certain people seem to be a little spiritually inclined. And they try to understand very philosophically why this thing is happening. And then they understand little philosophical things also. They understand that after all, actually we are not these bodies, we are the souls. So all this material enjoyment is for the body. It cannot touch the soul. The soul is beyond all this material sense gratification. And all this sense enjoyment only causes misery. So I'll refrain from these miseries. But then, even they know theoretically some spiritual subject matters also, some jnana they have, some knowledge they have, but still they end up doing the same activities again. So sometimes we see in newspapers, etc., some swamis and all, they get into scandals. Same thing is happening. Why? Because they know theoretically But still, they get back into the same problem. They know it is wrong through Gyan, maybe through the Shastras, but still they cannot refrain from these activities. So they end up in same anxiety, stress, tension, etc. And the Bhagavatam gives the example that Jnanis are compared to a person who understands from the doctor which kinds of eatables are good for me, which kinds of eatables are not good for me. He has got a complete list. The doctor tells him, don't eat this, don't eat this. Eat during these times of the day. And these things are allowed, these things are not allowed. And he has got a complete list. He has got Gyan of what is good for his body. So most of the time he is following all these principles. But some temptation comes. And again he falls back to the same trap. So simply knowing theoretically what is right, what is wrong, that is not sufficient. So even spirituality at the level that enjoyment is not good for us, enjoyment, material enjoyment, sense enjoyment leads to misery, that knowledge is also not sufficient. What is required is this, offering the results of our activities to Krishna. Only when we come to this platform can we completely refrain from forbidden activities. At no lower platform can we be relieved from anxiety, stress and tension. Artificially we might act as if we are peaceful, we are satisfied for some time. But in due course of time, we also get into the mad rat race. Become greedy, become angry, just like Indra. We also dive into the ocean. So Vritrasur, he actually, in some of his prayers, which he offers on the battlefield, he shows what was his state of consciousness when he was fighting with Indra. What made him so satisfied, so content, that he had no desire for victory whatsoever. What made him peaceful, equipoised, and free from anxiety even on the battlefield. On the battlefield, when the enemy is charging you with weapons, to be equipoised, to be peaceful, is it so easy? No. So if Vritrasura could do it, we can definitely do it in our little warfare in this world. At least we don't have to risk our lives. At the most we are risking some money, some prestige or position maybe. But we can remain equipoised if we adopt this principle of devotional service. Vritrasura is praying, Ajata Paksha Iva Mataram Kaga Sthanyam Yatha Vatsatara Kshudartha Priyam Priyeva Vishitam Vishanna Mano Aravinda Kshadidrakshate Tvam. O Lotus Eyed Lord, this is prayer on the battlefield. As baby birds that have not yet developed their wings always look for their mother to return and feed them. As small calves tied with ropes await anxiously the time of milking, when they will be allowed to drink the milk of their mothers, or as a morose wife whose husband is away from home always longs for him to return and satisfy her in all respects, I always yearn for the opportunity to render direct service unto you. So even though Vritrasura was on the battlefield, his consciousness was transcendental. He was tasting a superior flavor of happiness in connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that flavor of happiness was far superior than the flavor of happiness which could be got by attaining a material kingdom or by even being elevated to higher planetary systems. And also Indra, later on, he admits Vritrasura's glorious position when he says, Yasya bhaktir bhagavati haro nishreyasheshware vikridato amratam bodhav kim shudrai katakodakai. He addresses Vritrasura and says that the devotees of the Lord like yourselves You are swimming, vikridito amritam bodhav. You are swimming in an ocean of unlimited bliss because you are directly connecting yourself with the Supreme Lord and His devotional service. And people like me, Indra says, Chudre kata kodakai. We are swimming in small gutters of so-called happiness. So, actually, to reach this platform of satisfaction, peace and happiness, which springs from the heart, one has to adopt devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It cannot come about by artificially adjusting one's mind, as sometimes is taught in many personality development seminars. That just be cool, just be relaxed. How long? Because there is no higher happiness that is obtained through any process. Ultimately, a person falls prey to so-called enjoyment of this world. But because a person who is rendering devotional service to the Supreme Lord is experiencing a higher taste, a superior grade of happiness, he can remain equipoised, he can remain peaceful, however disturbing the outside environment might be. Because he has gained inner stability, and that cannot arise artificially. It has to be in connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nasti buddhir ayuktasya, nacha yuktasya bhavana, nacha abhyavaita shantir, ashantasya kutasukam. Krishna says in the Gita, nasti buddhir ayuktasya, that a person is not connected with the Supreme, he cannot have a steady mind. Nacha yuktasya bhavana, nacha abhyavaita shantir. Without a steady intelligence and mind, how can a person have peace? And without peace, where is the question of happiness? Krishna says it very clearly. So this process of devotional service has to be adopted to reach the platform of peace and happiness, if at all we want it, factually. And that is the understanding given in the Bhagavad Gita. Thank you very much. Is there any one question that anyone has? Vritrasur, so his question is, even while performing devotional service, sometimes we get into anxiety regarding what kind of services we get and things like that. Due to over-attachment. So Vritrasur, while encouraging Indra, he speaks another beautiful verse. Yuyutsatam kutrachidatatainam jayai sadai katranavei paratmanam vinaikamutpatti layastitishwaram sarvagyamadhyam purusham sanatanam. Now he speaks this verse when Indra temporarily loses by dropping his thunderbolt. And Vritrasur is telling, yutsatam kutrajir asadayanam jayasadaikatra navai paratmanam. In this world, only for one person, victory is assured at all times, all places, all circumstances. And who is that person? Krishna. Only for Krishna, it is guaranteed that he is always victorious. No question of defeat at all. Anyone except the Supreme Lord, sometimes he has to face failures. And a devotee of the Lord, a mixed devotee of the Lord, who has taken to the principle of devotion and service, like most of us, what happens is, we feel that, now that I am a devotee, I should be victorious at all times. Need not be the case. Victory or defeat is in Krishna's hands, even in the case of a devotee. If Krishna desires, a devotee will be victorious. But if Krishna wants that the devotee has to be defeated, the devotee will be defeated. It's like Sikshashakam Prabhu, he was quoting Bhakti Purushottam Maharaj. Bhakti Purushottam Maharaj was telling that this line is there. Rake Krishna Mareke, Mare Krishna Rakeke. But generally when devotees speak this, they are keeping in mind only the first sentence. Rake Krishna Mareke. If Krishna is protecting me, who can kill me? And we generally tend to focus only on the first part of the line. But we forget the second part. And also the reverse is true. If Krishna wants to kill us, nobody can protect us also. And Krishna is Swarat, independent. He can do whatever he wants. And a devotee knows it. Devotee is not a person who adopts the path of devotional service to become the controller. He adopts the devotional service and completely understands that Krishna is the enjoyer. He is a supreme controller. He is a supreme proprietor. So he can do whatever he wants. Sometimes I might face victory, sometimes I might face defeat in whatever endeavor. But a devotee has also a firm conviction in the last principle. And what is that? Krishna is the best well-wishing friend of everybody. He knows. So generally in this world what happens is, someone has a lot of control. He can do whatever he wants with you. Then it's a very fearful situation. Because he can do whatever he wants. Just like many countries in the Middle East, they take shelter of America, because they are very powerful. Rake America, Mareke, Mare America, Rakeke. But the problem is, they are out to exploit also. But that is not the case with Krishna. Krishna is the best well-wishing friend. So even though we might face some defeat in Krishna's service, devotee knows that this defeat is good for me. So that is why a devotee, he might undergo all kinds of apparent trials and tribulations in life. But still he is always equipoised, peaceful, happy, free from anxiety. Because he has firm conviction in the shelter of Krishna. Never gets into anxiety, even while performing devotions. Okay. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.